Hello and welcome to the Coaching in Education podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and today I'm joined by Simon Matthews, Deputy Executive Director of Independent Schools Tasmania and host of the Learning Landscape podcast. In this episode, we explore the power and potential of instructional coaching within the unique and diverse landscape of Tasmania's independent schools. From small rural campuses to large boarding schools, from faith-based to philosophy-driven models, the schools within IST each bring their own flavour to the coaching journey. Simon shares insights into how coaching has taken root across such a varied sector, the impact it's having, the challenges they've faced, and what lies ahead. So whether you're just starting to explore coaching or already deep in the work, there's something here for every school leader who wants to enhance teaching, learning, and leadership through meaningful professional conversations. Simon, it is a pleasure to have you join me on the podcast today.
Thank you, Richard. It's great to be with you, even though we're on other sides of the world. It's lovely to be together.
It is quite surreal. Technology is a wonderful thing. Simon, to kick things off, maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about your own educational journey. So what led you to your current role as Deputy Executive Director at Independent Schools Tasmania?
Thanks, Richard. Well, I always think that I started at the pinnacle of my career when I was a kindergarten and prep teacher. In Australian terms, that's 4 and 5 and 6 year olds. That was just a beautiful way to start an educational career. Went from there into school leadership as a principal, and then have had the last 20 years as an executive principal where we have multiple campuses or multiple schools that are being led. I've done that across a couple of Australian states. And look, I had the absolute privilege 12 months ago of being invited back to the perfect state of Tasmania to help lead the independent sector down here.
Yeah, fantastic. I have to say, if I had a hat on, I would take it off. Great respect for any educator who's fit to teach 4, 5 and 6 year olds, Simon. I genuinely, tremendous respect there. And a lot of our listeners will be saying, will be nodding their heads at the same time. So tell me, what have been some of the key moments or influences in your career that have shaped how you view leadership and learning in schools?
A couple of things, I think. One is I've always had the privilege, and it's been beyond me, it hasn't been my doing, but I've always had the privilege of being with and seeing really outstanding educators. So it is that sort of concept of what does a good one look like. And at every stage and in every place, I've just seen people who are exceptional at what they do. And that's been inspiring. That's been equipping. That's been challenging. It's really put a rocket up me a few times, and I've seen the work and the sort of the outcomes that these people get. But the second bit of that is that every stage, and again, it was less intentional and more accidental, but I sort of fell into the opportunity and since have started to be quite proactive in that of seeking out people who would coach me as an educator and as a leader. And it really was that coaching in the way that your organization talks about, that sense of coaching unlocking someone's potential to really maximize their own performance. It's really about helping me learn rather than teaching me. And whatever stage of my career I've been in, I've always had the opportunity to find someone who can do that skillfully. Wow. And that's been such an enormous help and inspiration for me.
Yeah. I love the fact that you combine those two words together, inspiring and challenging. And it's lovely, you know, in our line of work to meet other educators who, yes, inspire you, very, very important, but also challenge you at the same time. So it's lovely to hear that. For listeners maybe unfamiliar with the Independent Schools Tasmania, obviously we've got a global audience here. Can you paint maybe a picture of the diversity within your member schools, you know, and what makes this sector unique in your view?
Sure. Well, as you'd be aware, in Australia, we really have three sectors. We've got the sector that's owned and operated by the government. We've got our Catholic colleagues. And then, of course, we've got schools that fall outside of that who are really truly independent. We're blessed in this country to have government funding for all three sectors. And so we really are in a very privileged position when we look globally at education. Hmm. So we're one of those sectors. And within the Tasmanian context, we have a consistently increasing share of the number of students. We sit at over 11,000 now, which is about one in seven students in Tasmania go to some form of independent school. We're a pretty small association, 35 schools, but really that small group right across the full spectrum, as you said earlier, of the way that they see humans, people, and the way that they see education. And they see that from a range of faiths and philosophies. And we have very small schools, less than 50, right through to more than 1,300. And they come from all places across our state, some of which are pretty remote, but also all types of demographic communities. Sometimes when we think of independent schools, we think of those who serve the wealthier families. Our schools come from right across the demographic spectrum of our state.
Fantastic. So given that diversity, and that's quite amazing, across, you know, geography, size, values, and as you said, their education and philosophy, what would you say are some of the common challenges and opportunities that these schools face when it comes to teaching and learning as such?
Well, look, there are some really rich opportunities that our schools have. The very first one, and it seems almost so obvious you don't even think about it, but it's really every school is providing families with a choice about the education that they want for their children. I don't think there's too many things in the life of a family that are more important than a decision around who will we work with to educate our child. And so the first thing is every school is saying, we are providing you with a choice based on a view of people, a view of children, a view of life. So that's a choice. That's great. The second thing is that these schools really have a powerful cohesion and unity that's based on partnership, that's based on that view of life, that they're saying, you know what, we do believe that about our child also, and we want to work with you. So there's this inherent, developed, you've got to work at it, but it's inherent unity and cohesion that comes because we're actually on the same page about how our child will be seen and taught. And then, of course, the third bit of that, which is an extension, is therefore, there's a curriculum. There's a whole of life understanding, not just the curriculum that may be taught. It's also the curriculum that's taught and explored by that school. So everything from where we go, where we learn, who we visit, what we read is actually shaped by that understanding of the world. And that's a wonderful opportunity. There's richness and there's freedom in that. Look, some of the challenges we face are going to be common and understood by all of your listeners. You know, at the moment in Tasmania, we're struggling to make sure that we have access to really quality staff. And so part of what coaching does for us is take the staff we do have and really strengthen and grow them according to who we see our core business being in education. The second one is it's becoming harder to be really focused in schools on the core business. Our schools, and in some senses rightly, there's a whole bucket of compliance, there's a whole bucket of requirements.
Yeah.
So it's really challenging to say, let's keep the main game the main game. And so we face that just like anyone else. We don't have systems around us to help with some of that stuff, so people are stretched. So they'd be a couple of the challenges we face, just like I think probably every other school in the world.
Yeah, I think in many ways that's going to be encouraging to folks who are listening, Simon, because you know, you mentioned, you know, words there, you know, like compliance. You know, creeping in over the last number of years, we can see very, very, very clearly extra things that have come in that in many ways, you know, move our focus away from, you use that lovely phrase, the main game, you know, educating the young people within our care. And that's something that, you know, is going to relate to a lot of our listeners. So let's say we've got a podcast here called Coaching in Education, and you touched on coaching a little bit in that last response. So let's jump into the coaching side of things. How did the conversation around instructional coaching first begin within IS team? And was there a particular moment or a need that put a spotlight on instructional coaching?
Well, I think the thing that's unique about our sector is we're not a system. So we have 35 completely independent schools who within appropriate regulatory boundaries can make the decisions that they want about how education will look, how training will look, how equipping of staff will look. And so in our organization, we actually walk alongside. We don't direct, we can't tell, but we can influence. And I love the idea that Jim Knight talks about, that, you know, the heart of instructional coaching is that better teaching leads to better learning. And so if we're really clear about who we are about supporting schools to ensure that better learning takes place so that Tasmanian students are better equipped for all of life, then we can't go past the idea that instructional coaching is at the heart of that. And so we've actually got to not only believe that, we've got to deliver that. And so what we have said at Independent Schools Tasmania is we want to be ensuring that we're facilitating, we're offering really strong coaching, that we're reinforcing it in other areas of professional learning. Even if you're coming to learn about literacy in the early years, we're going to make sure that deep inside that is embedded a belief that instructional coaching will enhance that. And so we really want to strengthen and focus on teacher practice, on ensuring that teachers are well equipped, and we know that that is actually what directly impacts student outcomes. And so the real knock-on effect is we think about instructional coaching as being key to improving and equipping and strengthening teacher practice, which we know will deliver results for students.
That's really helpful. It's interesting when you're giving me that answer. It's interesting, you know, our listeners, I can just picture them, you know, leaders, when you hear that idea of we are not a system. And anyways, as a former principal myself, I just love that idea of not being in a system, you know, because you have the opportunity there written down, you know, you can make your own decisions around training. And use the phrase, you know, make your own decisions around how do we equip our teachers to be the best they can be, which is lovely. So what does the actual rollout then, or integration, if I can use that word, of instructional coaching look like across such a wide range of schools? I mean, has it been adapted differently depending on the context?
Yeah, look, I don't mean to be boring in this, but it really is just like a classroom. We're just trying to go in and meet people where they're at. And so we have a belief. We think we know what works. And so we go and share that and talk about that, provide that. But there's a couple of core planks to that. The first is, let's make sure that the training is really quality. And I'll perhaps talk a little bit later if we get the opportunity about who we partnered with and why. But we think that being able to train people with really strong quality product in the area of instructional coaching. The second bit of that is, once you're doing that, what's the feedback and the reflection opportunity that you have as a coach or as someone being coached? What's the opportunity that's there? And thirdly, in line with that reflection and feedback, you're going to want to get really good tailored and targeted responses. And so we're trying to do that with our schools. We're coming in and saying, we think this makes a difference. And we know that the biggest thing that moves the dial on that is stories. I can put down data, I can put down research, but it's when I tell you a story as a school leader, when they're saying something, I say, wow, do you know that Barry up the road was facing that same thing 18 months ago and he went down this track and this is now where he's at. So stories are really powerful. And then understanding where in the journey they're at. And we have a broad spectrum. Some schools have this stuff really embedded and they're really running hard. Other schools are dipping their toes in. And as we know, like in anything, some schools have had a crack and it hasn't worked. And so they're going, no, we've done that. We say, well, let's have another go. Let's work together. And so I think that the three bits of that puzzle are really important. What's your context? Who are you? Where are you? The second bit is, what are we going to be really focused on? And we're saying instructional coaching is it. And then the third bit is, let's make sure that we understand both the theory and the evidence-based practice of how to implement something really well. And it's that second and third bit that we try to bring to the table. School leaders know their context. They know that really well. But we try to bring really specific about what is instructional coaching, how does it work? And then the third bit is, and what does effective and successful implementation look like? Let's help you with that bit.
It's lovely to see your role as an organization, you know, play out in this? And you said earlier on there, Simon, very clearly, you know, we're not here to tell people what to do. In many ways, you know, you're there to partner with schools. And maybe that's where this idea of stories has come out. So you're noticing stories from various schools, and then you're able to share those stories. In many ways, like the podcast that you've taken on is a fantastic medium through which to do that. So that's a very encouraging story that you're telling there in many ways. So let's think about impact. You know, ultimately these principals are, you know, in your schools, they're wanting to put time and effort and money into something that is going to have impact on learning. So what kind of impact, you know, have you seen as a result of, in many ways, implementing instructional coaching in your schools? Maybe there's a story in there. There's the word story again that maybe stands out from the rest.
There are many stories, but let me tell you one today. We've got a small primary school. So if in the Australian context, that's about 4-year-olds through to about 12-year-olds. And they would be operating in probably Tasmania's area that's got the highest educational need of families. So we're not talking about affluent, we're not talking about easy. These people are really working in an area where good educational outcomes don't come easily, but they are so important. Mm-hmm. And that leader, the leader in that school, is so clear about what she wants. She says, I know what I want to see in my students, and that is calm learners who are really clear about what success looks like in the classroom. She's just so clear on that, and just broken record stuff on that. Mm-hmm. So what she's done is she said, I'm going to be really intentional and prioritize high quality learning from my teachers. That's the bit I can do. I can make sure that we prioritize time, we prioritize money. She's really generous. She has gone herself. She's taken others on study tours to make sure that she's out there seeing what the best practice is like and making sure that that's delivered. And then of course, through coaching, through instructional coaching, there's really real-time and honest feedback about how you're going in line with our vision. And so, you know, no holds barred in that. Polite, warm, but firm. Really clear feedback for teachers. And it's interesting, there have been two results. One's sort of, yeah, okay. The other's a bit like, oh, really? And the first one is, and this is less intuitive, it's like, teachers love the clarity. They actually say, I know what I'm going to go to school and do today. And I know that when I do it, I'm going to get timely and clear feedback on how I'm going and support to continue to grow. And teachers going, I'm having an impact. I know I'm having an impact, and I'm supported in delivering that impact. Mm-hmm. So we don't tend to think of that quickly. We go really quickly to student outcomes. But in fact, there are teacher outcomes that are so powerful. And guess what? They're motivated, they're excited. They're not going to leave the profession tomorrow. I can tell you that. They know the impact they're having.
Yeah.
The second bit, of course, is that we're seeing that in the student data. The data from that school is off the charts. They are doing so well. And I'm not just talking academic, behavioral data as well. Those kids are calm. Those kids are really clear about what successful learning looks like, and they're achieving that. And guess what? In 20 years' time, we're going to see huge outcomes for Tasmania because they've been in those classes. We're seeing it now, but that's a lifetime of change. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And that's a fantastic story, and we'll encourage our listeners, you know, as they listen to you say that. And there's a lovely phrase I've noted down here, Simon. What does success look like in the classroom? I mean, is that just, you know, picture a school where we can't say every teacher, but the majority of teachers that know and have a really good handle on what success looks like in the classroom. So that, you know, that's an inspirational thing for our listeners to be able to listen into. So let's think, are there other shifts that you've maybe noticed in teacher practice? You mentioned student outcomes there, but in teacher practice or maybe even collaboration as a result of this?
Yeah, look, there are. And again, this is often the unspoken or unexpected part of this journey. Let me just reflect on three quickly. One is, this process, the learning and then the doing, actually enhances my capacity as a teacher to reflect. So we're seeing reflective practice really jump up. Teachers are more regularly engaging in self-reflection. That's leading them to deeper insights about their own practice and about what's happening for their students. So this sense of reflection leading to awareness, fantastic. There's also greater agency, teacher agency. teachers are feeling more empowered because they're really clear about what they know. And in a little side issue, I don't want to dig too deep down this rabbit hole, but you know, the whole cognitive load issue for teachers is diminished because I know what I'm doing tomorrow. Okay. It's really clear. Someone's helped me with it. I've formed that. I've had input to that, but I've got agency because I know. And so that also frees up space, cognitive load, to experiment and adapt and take ownership of what's actually going on, because there's a whole lot of stuff I know and I do and I'm getting better at. So that's great. So the whole sense of teacher agency increases. Yeah. Thirdly, as that happens around classrooms, there's this greater sense of community, of success. And so really the coaching process builds stronger professional relationships and builds supportive environments where people feel valued and feel motivated to contribute and care for each other and support each other and celebrate with each other. That's fantastic. It's not a case that you're doing really well and I know I'm bombing and, well, I'm not going to turn up in the staff room because what have I got to celebrate? Not at all. We all celebrate, and that just builds this wonderful sense of community, you know. And I remember reading a while ago, and I wrote it down so I can read it, but Chris Munro sort of says, coaching as a leadership style is about creating a space where real growth can happen through intentional conversations that promote trust, accountability, and collaboration. And I don't know about you, Richard, but I want to teach in that sort of school where trust, accountability, and collaboration is prominent.
Yeah.
That's the sort of place I want to be.
It's interesting. I mean, just the way you articulate those thoughts, Simon, it comes across as a no-brainer. You know, certainly from my point of view, and I know we're biased in this game, but certainly for anybody listening, you know, when they're looking at this for the first time, you know, there's a lot of big wins and there's evidence of it. I've noted down here a couple of things. I mean, that idea of your teaching staff becoming more reflective in their practice, and you mentioned also the key one, teacher agency. But earlier on, you mentioned that word around clarity. You know, I know what I'm going to be doing tomorrow, or at least I've got a significantly better idea of what I'm doing tomorrow. And in many ways, you know, the teacher retention issue that's worldwide at the moment, it's not one particular country or continent. You know, there's an issue right now that a lot of schools are facing. So in these schools, the ones you describe where you say, wouldn't it be great to teach within these schools? I would imagine those issues then obviously are significantly less, or at least reduced, when it comes to teacher retention. So it very much is a no-brainer, and that's just helpful for you to clarify that for our listeners. If we're thinking about some of the biggest challenges, and I think this is really important for our listeners, because we can paint a lovely picture and all is rosy and wonderful, but at the end of the day, it's hard work and it requires effort, resilience and perseverance. So what would you say have been some of the biggest challenges in embedding instructional coaching as a part of school life?
Sure. If you are with our, what I would call our major football code in Australia, we call that Australian Rules Footy. And I was listening to an interview last week. They were talking with one of the coaches of a very successful team. And he came out and he said, excellence is hard. Excellence is hard. Everyone wants it, but people aren't prepared to turn up day after day, week after week, and put in the one percenters. Yeah. And I think it is that sense of it, and it's both internal and external, and I'll talk about those separately. You know, I know what works, but it takes my effort and energy and focus. It takes me to lead myself before I lead my classroom. It takes me to lead myself before I lead my team of colleagues at work. And so part of that is just that, you know, we get tired, and it's in Tasmania right now, it's winter and the days are dark, you know, so it's all those sort of things that, you know what works, but to turn up day after day and to do it. And so that's why me doing this, I could do this on my own. I could do this in my classroom. But when I do it in community, there's the opportunity to be taken along where all boats are rising, all boats are floating, and that's a really powerful thing. So I think one of the challenges is internal, and you can get that a bit yourself, you know, middle of the year, kids are sick, teachers are away, that becomes hard. So I think being able to just regularly reset and say, hey, do you remember what we're about? Yep, okay, look, we can all grow. So I think it's that sense of just personal and collective resilience to keep aiming for excellence. I think the second one is that other thing that that I said to you before, you know, which is the external pressure of what I would call, you know, technical tasks, not transactional tasks as a school leader. When I realize that I've got to get that financial questionnaire in and I've got to get that audit done and I've got to meet that registration requirement, it actually takes my gaze away from, yeah, I'm going to support these people in the next phase of our journey toward better instructional coaching so students continue. So I think they're some of the challenges that we're facing. So how do we get around that? By being really relational as an organization with our principals. How are you going? What else can we be doing? Last time you talked about this, how's that? Okay, well, what might be something that can help us get back on track with that? What could that look like? So our role is really important in that, because I don't have to do financial questionnaires. I don't have to do school audits. So I try to get alongside school leaders and instructional coaches and say, how can we help you and support you in that?
Mm, yeah. I remember all of those extras like they were yesterday, Simon, so it's interesting that you flagged those up. But you mentioned that lovely phrase when you brought the sporting analogy in there, excellence is difficult. And I remember hearing a quote from, again, another sporting individual over here in Ireland talking about the championships are won as much on the wet and windy winter nights as they are on the final day on the pitch. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. You mentioned Tasmania at the moment, you're coming into winter time, it's those dark nights and trying to inspire and motivate yourself, never mind other people. And that's where it takes grit, determination, and you mentioned that magic word, resilience. But even more importantly there, I think that word community. So you're not trying to do this on your own. And where there is community in the middle of those, you know, dark nights, then there are people to give you a lift. You know, and for you folks even in your organization who, as you say, don't have to fill in all those other forms and do those audits, you're actually in a position to say, listen, how can we help? How can we give you a bit of a lift, particularly during those wet and windy nights, as they say. Let's turn it to the flip side then and look at the positive. So what are some of the wins? And you mentioned that word unexpected earlier on today, which I think is really interesting as well. So what are some of the wins or unexpected benefits that have emerged?
Sure. Look, let's just focus on three. The first is, I don't think I've ever spoken to an educational leader who is in the game because they don't want to see kids get better. They don't want to see student outcomes. That's it. When you talk to a leader, you say, you know, why are you doing the job? And they say, it's about kids. It's about kids. So no question around the aspirational bit of that. But the reality is that for many of us, we struggle to be really clear about the how. How are we going to do that? And so I think instructional coaching gives people a real clarity about the how, you know, that we're going to do this and we're going to be really clear about what coaching looks like, and that's going to involve, you know, the feedback and that's going to involve improved practice. So I think there's clarity about how I do the how. No one needs reminding and refreshing about vision. But it's the practice that gets me there. That's really clear. The second thing is, instructional coaching gives you the capacity to bring a consistency. You've probably heard this term, you know, the lottery of which room you end up in. Are you going to end up in Mrs. Jane's or in Mr. Brown's classroom? Because that's going to be the lottery of how well you go in school.
Hmm.
Well, that just pulls the lottery right out of it. If we're clear about what effective practice looks like in a classroom and we spend time observing and providing feedback and reflecting on it myself and having coaching conversations that enable me to learn and understand what the next steps are, then that consistency becomes much greater across the school. And we know that the lottery of that comes out, because it's not based on what I did at school. It's not based on how I was taught at university, because that could be anything from 40 to 3 years ago.
There's a
real consistency, and that's really, really powerful. And one of our educators here in Australia says every kid needs that consistency to ensure that they have good outcomes, and it's really powerful.
Yeah.
I think the third thing that we've spoken about is this sense of collaboration or community, that we're actually all in the room together. I'm not off beavering away, you know, accessing the resources that I've got and you're going to your networks. And so it just comes down to, well, what's the wealth I have? And it's for me. It's very much we're in this game together. So I think some of the real wins around that for educators and for schools are this clarity about who we are and what we're doing. This real consistency across the classrooms that whoever you end up with, you're going to be getting really high quality instruction. And the third thing is we're in it together. You know, it's not a solo run. This is a team sport and we're doing it together.
Yeah. No, that's really helpful. And I'd love to ask a question. I mean, on the back of that, and this is timely, and this maybe appeals to the skeptics. There's always one or two out there listening into these shows, you know, yourself, Simon.
Not in Tasmania.
No, I can't imagine. But, you know, you've got leaders listening right now and they say, yes, you know, you folks are involved in this. You know, you've seen lots of different things and you're very enthusiastic and upbeat. And that comes across really clearly. But how ultimately do you measure success or progress, you know, in each of these schools and their coaching journeys? And any thoughts around that?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, the first thing that we've got to be able to say is we know what it looks like. Hmm. So what, define it, actually write it down. And, you know, sometimes the challenge is not that I can't measure it or I don't know if I'm successful. Like the issue is I actually don't know what I'm shooting for. And so let's be really clear about what does success actually look like. The second bit of that is let's be clear about the range of ways and, you know, qualitative ways that we can actually see how we're going. Thirdly, let's be really frank and fearless in actually measuring that thing. You know, let's not skip around and say, oh, well, you know, Simon had a bad night and his dogs died. You know, let's be really clear. Simon, we're looking for X and you provided Y. You provided Y very nicely, but it wasn't X. And so let's be clear in that feedback. And then the fourth thing is let's be persistent about saying we know how to keep going. We know what the next step is. And that's, we do that really well as educators. We know our students. We know what success looks like in grade three.
Yeah.
And I know that this group of students need that and that group of students need that. And so some of that sort of multi-tiered systems of support actually need to come into our school leadership and into our schools and understand not everyone needs X. You know, this group need this, but this group need that. And we've got the capacity to deliver that. And so I think if we can really be clear about what we're looking for and then be articulate about how we're going to know if we've seen it. And I love that. Some of the best conversations I've had with coaches and leaders when I've worked for them and with them has been, tell me about that, Simon, you know, and I'd wax lyrical. And then they say, show me. And that's when I'd start to get the cold shivers and go, I'm not sure I can, you know. And it's the show me that's so crucial. And then, of course, it's the ongoing support around how do we keep moving people forward.
Yeah. Do you know, I love that idea and the difference between tell me and show me. You know, I think that's really helpful. And that's going to help skeptics. We're keeping them at bay, Simon. I think you're doing a terrific job there. You know, when it comes to how do we address those things and measure progress and success. Let's say we look ahead a little bit and sort of picture, you know, what's next for instructional coaching. This is an ongoing evolving thing within your network. You know, are there new directions, partnerships, or maybe priorities on the horizon ahead?
Yeah. It's not going to surprise you to say that the core to success for instructional coaching in Tasmania will be relationships. And we are so blessed in our state to have someone called Ange Mercedes. You'd know Ange. And I sort of see, so I'm not so focused, okay, what's the next program? The issue is, how can we continue to build really good relationships? And our frontline relationship is with Ange, and we love that. She's an absolute expert, but she's also a practitioner. She is an educator. She has done the hard yards in the trenches. Right. She is there. And she, of course, has connected us with Growth Coaching International. And so the folks there are just fabulous in helping us to be really reflective on what we need, but also reflexive, being able to respond to the needs that we have. And it's through that relationship that we've got Jim Knight coming to Tasmania for the first time. So you can see how relationship has really brought home wonderful benefits for us. Look, generally, so that's in place and we're going to continue to really work hard with Ange and with GCI. But for us, it's about this layering. So, for instance, this year we did the introduction to leadership coaching. We're getting Jim coming in and doing some instructional coaching work. But then the question will be, okay, who needs that again? Who needs to revisit that? Who needs to see that for the first time? What's that base layer of understanding? But then it's taking our colleagues who are ready for more to the next level and saying, okay, what could that look like? How could that work? But that's also about us as consultants being able to say, okay, I'm upskilling, and so I can see and identify that that's where they're at. They're telling me this, so therefore, why don't we explore this space together with them? And so a few things, relationships crucial, but also a really clear pathway and journey for development and growth. And that's where GCI is so good for us, because they help us identify what some possible next steps are that would be good for our team.
I suppose it comes back to that idea of clarity, you know, a bit like the teachers in the classroom, you know, is really important. But it's lovely you mentioned there, and I think this is really important, and it's good to get this across so clearly to listeners. It's about people, not programs. You know, you mentioned relationships, you know, as you move forward, as you measure it, you know, what's the direction of travel? It's around people and not programs. And you've given us lovely examples of how that's currently working out for you within your particular network. So when it comes to, you know, your hope for the future, and I'm going to broaden it out just very slightly to just professional learning in general within Tasmania's independent schools, what's your hope for the future in that broader sense?
Sure. Again, going back to Jim Knight, you know, he says, when teachers stop learning, so do students.
Yeah.
And so it's a pretty simple equation for us. Do we want better outcomes for students? Then let's provide opportunities for teachers to continue to grow, to continue to be curious and innovative and informed and reflective. And so our hope would be that every teacher in Tasmania, and that's not just our sector, we work collaboratively and strongly with the other two sectors and other organisations to ensure that teacher opportunity is always on the up. Now, that's the sort of the core centre. We want to see teachers. You've got to do a whole lot of things around the edge of that. You've got to provide quality opportunities. You've got to make sure that they're not distracted. You've got to take other things off the desk, and you've got to de-implement some stuff so that they're free. So get all that. But the bit that Independent Schools Tasmania can do is make sure that we're providing really, really quality opportunities for growth, and sometimes this is the harder bit, and people know about them and value them. And so that is about storytelling. That is about being able to share really powerful resources. That is about taking people on study tours. And so those two things go together. Seeing the quality and understanding that that's what I need, but also making sure that I'm aware of what's out there and what's needed and how it actually applies to my everyday. Because getting back to that cognitive load, I've got to show you that A and B will equal C. We don't have A and B and you might end up somewhere. We're saying, no, if you do this and it looks like this in your classroom, then we know that there's going to be impact. And impact is so powerful. It's such a key driver for educators.
Yeah. Impact, definitely the key word in all of this. Simon, finally, and I'm thinking about our listeners here who right now are listening to this, and there are some out there who haven't started with instructional coaching. So they're dipping their toe in the water. They're reading around things. They're listening to podcasts like yours and ours. What advice would you offer to those folks at that point? Where really is a good place to begin?
Again, pretty simple. But I'd say find someone who's down the journey and ask them the question, is it worth it? Is it worth it? This is going to take time and effort. It's going to take resource. Is it worth the investment? And I am yet to meet an educator, a leader, who has made the investment and seen the power of the investment in their school tell me it wasn't worth it. And that's a pretty amazing claim, isn't it? That people become so convinced by the doing and the seeing that they go, yep, if I had my time again, I'd be doing that again.
Yeah.
So my point would be, find someone. And if you don't know who to have a conversation with, well, you know, pick up the phone to Richard Reed or talk to Growth Coaching International or someone and say, hey, tell me someone who's doing this and ask them hard questions. Yeah, but what about? What happens when? What would happen if? So actually ask some hard questions and really kick the tires on it. But I believe that if people can see this in action and see, like we said before, the benefits for their colleagues, what it means in the staff room, and then the benefit for their students, what it looks like in the classroom, and then the obvious knock-on effects for the wider community of students who are better equipped, then I can't see a person not committing to making the investment to ensure that this looks really strong in their school.
Yeah. Wise words, wise words. Simon, it has been a real joy chatting with you today. We are genuinely grateful for your time. Thank you for offering such thoughtful and authentic reflections on the evolving role of instructional coaching in Tasmania's independent schools. It's very clear from chatting to you today that even in diverse contexts, the coaching approach provides powerful, flexible framework for growing practice, as you mentioned in there, building professional trust. For our listeners, if you're a school leader wondering where to begin, Simon's advice and insights will have been a great help and inspiration to you, I'm sure. And if you'd like to find out more about the work of Growth Coaching International, check out our website at growthcoaching.com.au for an impressive display of free resources, information on upcoming courses, and much, much more. And finally, I trust you will join me on the next episode of the Coaching and Education Podcast, where theory and good intentions meet reality.